There is a story about a minister and his wife who were expecting their first grandchild at this time of year. Their son and daughter-in-law lived in New York City, and so they went up to visit, stayed for a few days, but on the way back, the husband told his wife, "You know, I just am not getting excited about this, and I know I should be excited." And she said, "Build a cradle." And so he did. For the next several weeks, whenever he could spare any time, he went to his workbench, and by Christmas, the cradle was done. He could hardly wait for their next trip, when they would visit their newborn grandchild and present the cradle. I wonder if this approach might work for us as we approach the holidays. Only a fortunate few are expecting grandchildren right now, but most of us have some dreams wrapped up in the December holidays, and whether we focus on Christmas or Hanukkah, the solstice or Kwanzaa. And yet, standing in the way of entering into our holiday dreams, we can already feel the encroaching pressure of planning for holiday travel, preparing our homes for the visit of friends and relatives who may come to stay with us, preparing them for holiday entertainment, preparing for musical performances. And for almost all of us, there are gifts to plan, whether those wrapped up in gift wrap or in the form of year-round giving. Some may even be counting down until all these holidays are past and life will return to normal again in January. Not many, but some. Today is the second Sunday in Advent on the Christian calendar. Advent isn't much more than a blip on our calendar as Unitarian Universalists, but this morning I invite us to linger a bit with it. For Advent is indeed about lingering. Lingering and reflecting as we prepare room in our hearts for the birth of hope at this holiday season. In traditional theological terms, it's about preparing for the birth of the Christ child in our hearts. But what can Advent mean to those of us who don't consider ourselves Christian? In its largest sense, the Christ child is a symbol that stands for peace and goodwill, love, and above all, hope in the face of the pain and anger all around us in the world. Whether we're Christian or not, we need that hope. I think that most of us, much of the time, long for a fresh sense of hope. Hope that life does not have to be lonely and preoccupied with self. Hope that the world does not have to be riven by war. Hope that somewhere there's a place for us as we are, where we can be welcomed as we are. We yearn to be at one with the world and with those around us, to experience peace and bring goodwill. Those feelings can become especially poignant at this holiday season, as the holidays are being celebrated all around us. Now, Christmas abounds with stories of seeming miracles which touch these places of longing in our hearts, but something too often gets in the way. That something is the busyness of our lives. Christmas has become almost a secular holiday, an industry, if you will. Stores open early and close late. That's if they don't stay open all night. We are inundated with ads. We have houses to make ready, meals to plan. We have cards to send, contributions to make, travel to arrange. It's easy to feel overwhelmed at a time when we're most in need of inward renewal. Making a cradle is about being intentional in preparing ourselves in the face of these demands, to have the kind of holiday experience we long for, in spite of these demands. The first step, then, is to take some time to sit back and reflect on what it is that we long for, what for each of us is the most important thing. Is Christmas about the rituals of the season? In worship and candles and song? Is it about renewing old friendships as we exchange greeting cards and family letters? Or hospitality to today's friends and neighbors as we make our homes beautiful, ready for festive hospitality? Is it about renewing our family ties as our clans gather for holiday meals and the opening of gifts? Is it a longing for peace in the world and helping those less fortunate? And for all of us, do we not long also to feel renewed and inspired? If we try to do all these things, we may be in trouble. But let's be honest, we don't have to do it all at Christmas. Holiday cards and letters can start earlier or wait longer. We can go to church and to concerts all the year long. Parties, too, don't have to be seasonal. Even friends and family can gather at any time, or talk, or write. For most of us, there will be some combination of these most important things. For me, Christmas, along with Easter, is my central religious holiday. It begins with music, not the music of the mall, but the music of tradition. Every year, I need at least one Christmas concert. Last year, my Christmas overflowed with music. There was a wonderful concert by the Washington Chorus. It was a performance of The Nutcracker. That's a Christmas staple for many of us. It included our granddaughter, who had a featured role, although beginning many years ago, as a mouse. This year, we've begun already listening to Christmas carols for hours on our travel home from Indianapolis last week. The Chorus and The Nutcracker will repeat in the days ahead this year. Worship is important for me, too, with stories of Jesus' birth that have been part of my life since earliest childhood. We had no Christmas Eve service in the Unitarian Church where I grew up, but I'm sure the centrality of music for me at Christmas and of worship have something to do with my Sunday school experience of going one Christmas Eve with my high school class studying the church across the street to attend midnight mass at the local cathedral in Syracuse. I've spoken before of the mystery of that gathering. We arrived very early, and even then there was standing room only. There was no conversation, no coffee. It was silent. An air of expectancy had a dramatic effect on me. And so in my adult years at All Souls in Washington, I tried never to miss a Christmas Eve service. Our Christmas Eve services here in Loudoun are no less special for me now. And then there are the stories. I'm not just thinking of the story of Phyllis and my first trip here for a Christmas Eve service. I guess that would be 3 years ago when it snowed. Ricky will remember it. He was the service leader. We were in frequent conversation by cell phone as we came down from Frederick. We didn't get here until after the service ended. I don't know whether Ricky ate all the cookies. There were some left. But it was a memorable drive, even though we left earlier than usual to allow for the snow. We didn't allow anywhere near enough time, as traffic just sat still. That is a Christmas story I will always remember. So soon after Thanksgiving, though, expanding my interest in Christmas stories, I start going through a whole shelf of books I've collected over the years of Christmas stories. Touching, moving Christmas stories. Some would say soupy Christmas stories. Stories of people whose hearts were warmed by goodwill, by contacts with other people that changed their way of seeing things. I pour through them looking for stories to share with you on Christmas Eve, and just browsing as the stories themselves bring back warm memories and often tears. Family is important too. Always my mind goes back to Christmases past, when I was the age of these kids who gathered here in front this morning, and With my mother, we made cookies and set them out for Santa Claus, right by the fireplace. It took some time for me to reflect on how they happened to be gone in the morning, but they were always gone. And later Christmases, I remember traveling home for the holidays when I was in the service in Idaho. We crossed the country with several friends, nonstop, driving through some weather I wouldn't dream of setting forth in now. I may have acquired a little more sense, but we got there. And I let myself in the house in the wee small hours and crashed on the sofa, and my family were quite pleased in the morning to have me surprise them in that way. And then some of us, maybe all of us, will remember those first holidays away from home, when we could not or did not get back home. For me, I was in England at the time, with good friends there, but it wasn't quite the same as being home. Whether you're at school or in your first job in some other place, or you're beginning a new life, a new relationship. Whenever in our lives it first happens, all of us know what it means to gather for the holidays and remember loved ones who are no longer present, no longer with us at the table. Whether it's grandparents, parents, siblings, for a few of us even children. The holidays, whichever ones we most identify with, can be seasons of great joy, and yet our joy is inevitably mingled with a tinge of sadness for these losses. So what makes the holidays real for you? Deciding what's most important is the first step, I think, in building a cradle. Figuring out what we most want, and then setting priorities for all those seasonal demands. Those are the first two steps. There are two more. Step three is clearly spiritual. It's enhancing the quality of our preparations for the holidays, including things that we may not enjoy doing, but have to be done. At the top of my list on those things that have to be done and that I don't enjoy doing is cleaning the house. I don't know what it is for you. There may be some of you who are mature enough, maybe quick enough and competent enough to breeze through the dusting and the vacuuming and putting things away. It's hard. The secret here, though, I think a secret which I have trouble practicing, but still I preach, is to be fully present to the moment, to remember why it is we are doing this, to remember the pleasure we expect to have and want to give, thanks to a clean house, thanks to a family gathering. And then maybe there's the opportunity to enhance those experiences by listening to some of the music we love, whatever that may be. Even with a vacuum cleaner, I suspect most of us have earbuds and can adjust the volume up a little bit over the roar of that vacuum cleaner. And then there are things like starting the day and ending the day with some reading or reflection, prayer, maybe a favorite holiday story, remembering the Christmas past. All these things can help to keep us centered. And finally, in all our contacts and conversations during the day, the fourth step, I think, is to make a special effort to appreciate the people we are with, whether it's at work, riding the bus or metro, whether it's at home. It could even be with in-laws we're not as thrilled to see, or we're thrilled to see for a shorter time than perhaps they plan to stay. But after all, they are ours too. It's my prayer for all of us that as we take these intentional steps to embrace the holidays, the quality of our busyness in these days of December will be transformed. This transformation will go a long way to prepare us for the holidays. But there's still another possibility as we may find that these first few steps have enough effect on us that they call us to reach out in ways that we hadn't planned. Might be in caroling over there at the village that Carol's talking about. It might be in the way we greet passers-by. It might lead us to a special visit, to visit someone who's sick or shut in, or call them. And that will help us come alive with a holiday spirit. From all these perspectives, what it means to build a cradle at Advent begins with some spiritual preparation that will allow us to experience the kind of holiday that we long to have. In the end, it's about opening our hearts to the beauty of the world around us and to the love that we have to give at Christmas and all the year. I want to leave you with a story, which is from that collection on my shelf. It's one that always touches me. It's told by Christine Holmgren of Northfield, Minnesota, but it could be about you or me. We've all been in need of a miracle at some time in our lives. This year it might be you who needs one desperately, or who can make it happen for someone else. Holmgren writes, "I was 16 when my father left. That year there was no Christmas tree, no turkey dinner, no presents. My mother worked two jobs as a cleaning lady. I sold hats at a department store in downtown St. Paul. It was Christmas Eve. The store had just closed. The street lights were decorated. Somewhere church bells tolled out Silent Night. I stood alone on the corner and waited for the bus to take me home. I shivered against the wind and considered how one year had changed everything. My parents' marriage was over. My home and my heart were broken. The divorce did not surprise anyone but me. My father's fierce anger had exhausted my mother's forbearance years before. But he had never gone away before, never abandoned us. I resented him for the destruction of my family. These were the things I thought of as I lumbered onto the freezing cold bus. I found a seat next to the bus heater and placed my feet on the perfect spot. Hugging my corduroy pants, I cherished the small comfort of the heater. That is when it happened. A man, perhaps in his 60s, appeared from somewhere in the back of the bus. He wore a hat like Frank Sinatra used to wear. A fine Pendleton wool muffler hid half his face, and he carried a large shopping bag. "May I?" he asked, as he gestured to the seat next to me. I looked away. I didn't speak to strangers, especially men. He sat down next to me and placed the shopping bag between us. He sat beside me, studying my worn coat, my desperate hug of my corduroy pants. Then he cleared his throat and touched my arm. "Excuse me," he said, "and pardon me for intruding, but I couldn't help notice that you're shivering. Are you all right?" He peeked at me from behind his muffler, and when his eyes met mine, I saw something I had never seen before. It was the face of a kind man. For a moment, I felt the chill of the bus dissipate. "You look tired," he said. "Have you had a tough day?" When he spoke, I realized that I was watching his concern for me take form. The sensation was new, foreign. My father's face was never filled with worry for me or anyone else. I wondered if this man had children. The bus stopped, and he rose to leave. "I get off here," he said. "I hope the rest of your Christmas is better than tonight." "Thank you, sir," I said. "I heard..." I heard my voice break. He was nearly off the bus when I realized he had left his package. "Hey, mister," I called, "you forgot your things." "No, I didn't." He pulled his muffler over his face again and waved, "You keep it." The bus doors closed behind him and he was gone. The bus driver insisted that I carry the package home. So I did. The house was dark when I arrived. My mother was sitting in the living room, wrapped, asleep in her chair. At first, she didn't believe me when I told her what had happened. But my story was so marvelous, she came to accept it. We opened the shopping bag and found three packages wrapped with red ribbon and golden paper. There was a box of white chocolate in one package, a bright red wool scarf in another. The smallest package held a tiny mother-of-pearl music box. The tune it played was, "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." When I lifted the lid, its song reminded me that there was one kind man in the world. If there was one, I thought, there must be others. If there are others, the world is not an ugly place. And the lyrics to the song are true. Next year, all our troubles will be miles away. Christmas will come, whether we're ready or not. But will it come to us, or will it pass us by? Will it come to those around us, or pass them by? Let's make cradles this Advent season. Let's make room for miracles.